The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Yes, I'm back. Back from Hawaii. That's where I was last week, and we actually broadcasted from the Ritz-Carlton in Kapalua, Maui last Sunday. I hope you enjoyed it. Our guests that we had on the show last week, but we are back in studio this Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. That's right. Been there since, been there almost 49 years. We'll be 50 years, April 2018, but I've talked to you about that enough times. It's been a long time since we've been doing financial planning here in the community. And I got to tell you, I am so excited when it seems like each and every week we get a couple phone calls from people who are listening to the show. They call up. They say they hear us. They say that there was something that I said that, believe it or not, they said was smart. So that's kind of encouraging because my kids don't seem to think that much of what I say is very smart. So I really appreciate you boosting my ego and saying that something that I said made sense to you and you've scheduled some time to come into the office and schedule a free initial consultation. We do financial planning and provide investment advice for individuals and families who live on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. But of course, there are always those that leave this area. They head down to Florida. They head out to Arizona. They go to the Carolinas or to Georgia or to Texas. And what's beautiful about our office is we're able to provide that advice to you on an ongoing basis. No, we generally don't take clients, you know, who reside or have always resided in, say, Arkansas or Texas or California or whatever. But if you started with us here and you've moved out to another state, somewhere out in this country, we are licensed in all 50 states and we fully enjoy continuing that relationship with you. Periodically, we may even make a visit out to see you. In fact, if you're in Florida, you can be certain of it. If you're in the Carolinas, you can be certain of it. Even New York and even California, we make those visits because we have a few clients that have headed out that way. Everybody always starts right here within that 10-mile radius of my office in Peabody, Massachusetts. So it's always kind of cool to go back and visit with folks down in Florida who lived here and they remember the Red Coach Grill, you know, on Route 1 and eating roast beef sandwiches out by Kelly's Roast Beef. They remember the Hilltop. They remember Valleys. They remember when all those places were actually busy. And, now Hilltop is a parking lot. Valleys is long gone. Waylu's up on the hill, gone too. Remember, there was actually a time when four of the 10 most profitable restaurants existed right here on Route 1. It was Waylu's, Kowloon, Hilltop, and I'm missing one, Hilltop, and, oh, the Ship. The Ship restaurant, another very popular one. The Ship, as many of you guys know, that's going down too. Ship's being destroyed. I used to work at the Ship. That's what I did before I started getting into this business. I was the waiter for a number of years at the Ship restaurant, then was the restaurant manager when I graduated from Babson College, then went off to sell Chinese food takeout containers, and then I stepped it up and I joined this practice, and it's worked out pretty well because I have the great privilege of being able to provide you with financial advice in a language you can understand. And hey, here's some good news. Here's some good news that I'm going to tell someone for the first time. On the advice of many people, including my producer sitting right across from me, we reached out to an attorney and have decided to trademark financial advice in a language you can understand. And I just got the approval this past week that we're going to be able to do that. So we'll be using that a lot. And so we're pretty excited about that. So if somebody else wants to steal my financial advice in a language you can understand, I get to cash in, I guess. I mean, are they going to pay for the rights to use it? I don't even know how it works, but I know that it's now mine. So I'm delighted that we've been able to do this on the radio, use that expression for the longest time. And it's what people really enjoy about Dollars and Cents. We provide financial advice in a language you can understand. And we're going to do that today I want to talk to you about a few real life stories that have gone on within the office. Of course, we'll protect the innocent, protect the clients who have brought these situations to us, of course, but they are very real situations. And it's questions that I'm constantly asked on a regular basis in my office, perhaps when I'm out, even at the supermarket, when I run into somebody, people always ask me these similar questions. And one of them revolves around this thing called the 4% rule. A lot of people, maybe you know what I mean by the 4% rule when I simply say it, but many people have heard that when you retire, if you draw 4% from your portfolio, as long as it's managed well, you'll never run out of money. And so many people come to me already preparing for retirement with the expectation that they are going to take 4% from their portfolio. And if they can do that, they're going to be just fine. Well, what I've told them is that, well, in theory, that makes sense. But in reality, not so much. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. We're also going to talk a little bit about Social Security. Social Security has been a hot button right now. When to collect Social Security. People hear that I say, I had someone come to my office this past week and she says, I'm sorry, Mark, I didn't take your advice. So I need to let you know this before we get started. I did not take your advice. I took Social Security at age 62 and I know you told me not to, but I did it anyways. And I don't really regret it, but I just want to apologize. You're not going to be mad at me, are you? Mad at you? No, these are your choices. This is your money. One of the things that I hear a lot is that people go to their financial advisors and their financial advisors get mad at them. Do you have a financial advisor who's ever made you feel small or ever insulted you or got angry because you chose to move the account somewhere else or place money somewhere else? Man, if you've got that, please walk away from that relationship. That is not how financial advisors, financial planners, that's not how they operate. Maybe that's how someone that you know does, but man, there are better relationships about that. When I hear some of the stories about how some people have been berated by their advisor for not taking advantage of an offering that they thought was important or an investment strategy that they thought that they made sense or a decision to move from one account to another and they chose not to and they get mad. I can't believe that. I can't believe that. You know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because we years ago when we were hiring some folks for our office, one of the prospects said to me, well, how often do you yell at your employees? That was the question that she had for me. How often do you yell at your employees? And I couldn't believe she asked that question. I'm thinking, man, I've never yelled at my employees. Maybe I should. I mean, I know I'm a bit of a softy, but God, I've never yelled at my employees. And she said she was refreshed to hear that she actually didn't believe me. That, you know, that we didn't yell at people. And she says, my boss yells all the time, making us stay late, making us work harder, blaming us for this. But look, at the end of the day, if there's ever a problem in my office, if there's something that a client isn't satisfied with, if it's something that my staff isn't satisfied with, at the end of the day, it's on me. I'm the boss. I'm the guy that owns the company. So even if it is somebody else's fault, I'm going to take accountability for it. It's one of those things that I find is very rare today. Actually, in our youth is very unwilling to take accountability for anything. It's so easy to point it on somebody else or to blame someone else. Actually, we do it actually in our day-to-day lives as well. We point the fingers to say, oh, this isn't working because of taxes or because of the government, because of our president, because of the weather, because of whatever. We blame it on everybody else. We hate taking accountability and responsibility for it. And instead of taking those lemons and letting them get sour, we're not making lemonade out of it. This past week when I was down in Florida, I mean, I'm sorry, when I was out in Hawaii, I've confused with some of the travel I've been doing. When I was out in Hawaii, the keynote speaker, who I got to spend a large amount of time with, was a gentleman by the name of Bert Jacobs. I don't know if you know the name Bert Jacobs. Bert founded and started with his brother, Life is Good. You know all those t-shirts, the Life is Good t-shirts with little Jake the stick figure up there, the big smile. And he talks about optimism. And that's what Bert was out talking to us about, is how he created optimism out of everything in his life. And he talked about the importance of taking responsibility and not pointing fingers in somebody else and not being the pessimist all the time, being the optimist and making the best of everything. it's kind of a premise that I've always built my practice on. It used to drive people nuts, even when I was younger. Yeah, I was a waiter, and my wife doesn't let me tell this story very often, but I used to be a waiter at Denny's in Danvers. You know what Denny's is? Well, Denny's isn't anymore. Apparently, I just realized that Denny's has closed. But Denny's right across from the Liberty Tree Mall. I was a waiter there. And if you remember when you were younger, Saturdays and Sundays, you would get up and go for breakfast. You'd either go to Denny's or you'd go to the IHOP. And we all know where the IHOP is, over in front of where Polana is now, across from, used to be the Farm Stand, now it's Petco. And we would go there on Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings, and you'd sit and you'd wait for your table to be called. The families would go in. Everyone would be getting kind of squirmy. But I would be the guy that would be working in the restaurants, and I'd be your waiter. And people would get so angry that I was so cheerful. It's like, dude, this is Sunday morning. Just tone it down a bit, you know, man. And I'd start entertaining their kids at the table. It's like, dude, leave my kids alone. They're just, and I mean, their kids are screaming and yelling, and I'm trying to just change the environment here a little bit, trying to improve it. And people did not like the optimistic approach that I had with everything. And so I enjoyed Bert Jacobs. Bert's got a new book out. It's called Life is Good, and it's called The Book, Life is Good, The Book. And it tells the story about how Life is Good was created, how life happened, and how Life is Good, grew into what it is, $100 million T-shirt company, $100 million T-shirt company. Now, if you saw Bert Jacobs today, which I saw him this past week, many people refer to him now as Jesus because that's who he looks like. If you've seen pictures of Jesus, got the long hair, the beard, he dresses in T-shirts, shorts, and flip-flops. That's Bert Jacobs. He's loving life. He really is. But to listen to his story, to hear what he has to say, he refers to himself as a hippie capitalist. That's what he refers to himself as. He says, you know what? The first thing that you should never be ashamed of is to make money. He says, look, we're in the business. You go to work every day and you make money. Are you ashamed of that? Would you be willing to take less for what you're making? So, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you work in the line at some fabrication company, there's nothing wrong with making money and wanting to make more money. As long as there's some element of purpose in your life that says, I'm making this money to do good somewhere. And Bert was famous. He's created the Life is Good Foundation, of course. Maybe I should try to see if I can get Bert on we had a good enough time that I bet I could get him on this show. See, Bert, maybe you know this or not, I play the piano. And so every night from 9:30 to about midnight, there was a piano in one of the lounges that remained empty. And so I'd go in there and start playing the piano every night, and these swarms of people would start gathering around the piano, Bert being one of the first people to hang out around the piano. We would be up all night singing along and playing the piano. I want to see if maybe I can get him on the show. That would be kind of fun. Well, all right, I'm going off the subject, but I'm trying to provide financial advice in a language you can understand. And one of those pieces of financial advice in this language that you can understand is to take some of the money you make and do good with it. I don't care whether it goes to charity, whether it goes to buying experiences for you and your family, for your kids. Do good with it. Do good and do what you feel is good. Not what somebody says is the good thing to do with it. I think we find ourselves oftentimes writing checks and making donations because we've been convinced by somebody that this charity or this program or this event is good. And maybe it is. But is it good in your heart? Not in their heart, in your heart, to make that happen. It's really interesting here in Massachusetts, when I talked to other advisors all around this country, we are among the cheapest when it comes to charitable contributions in this country. We are absolutely among the cheapest. Now, I will tell you, it doesn't matter. The number of contributions you make doesn't matter. It's the amount. I had never heard, being a Jew, I had never heard the term tithe. Now, people thought it was crazy. You've never heard the term tithe? Well, I guess that's really big in the churches, certainly down in the Bible Belt and whatnot, to tithe 10% of your pay. Have you ever imagined taking 10% of your gross income and tithing it to some kind of charitable entity? Most people won't even afford to put 10% of their pay in their 401k plan, let alone put 10% into a charity. But I will tell you, when you start doing some of that stuff, it is good. It feels good. It's the right thing to do. You get a benefit. They get a benefit. You choose the charity that works for you. And I'm telling you, it's important. All right. I got a lot of things to talk to you about today. I kind of went off the subject here in my first little run. But when we get back, I'm going to talk to you about this 4% retirement rule and why it's not as great as it sounds like. What do you think of that? We'll be right back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we provide financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. You know, some of that little spiel I've got memorized, and then all of a sudden you go blank, and you go, oh my God, what comes next? But that's what we do. We've been doing it for a long time. We manage, everyone always asks me a few of these, you know, tell me a little bit about the firm, the depth of the firm, who's there and all that stuff. So here's some of the statistics. We manage about $330 million in our office. We have a staff of five. Average account size is around $800,000. That, not average account, average household size, I should say. Sometimes you have two or three accounts and it adds up to that. But the general range is between $500,000 and $2.5 million. That's where they generally fit. If you got a little bit more than that, we still certainly, of course, accommodate for that. Under that, usually it's about $500,000 to really get started in the office for us to be able to do the comprehensive financial planning work that you want. We provide all of our clients with a comprehensive dashboard of their financial life. You get it provided to you both through your tablet, through your phone, on your computer if you wanted it. It's totally and fully encrypted. No one has access to any of your information. You can plot the progress not only of your investment account, but plot the progress of your ability to achieve your retirement goals. You can also plot the progress as you're taking money out of your account. And 65% of our clients, 65% of our clients take distributions from their account, meaning that they're retired or approaching retirement. It means we take care of the required minimum distributions. We take care of trying to figure out when's the best time to take Social Security. We figure out when it's the best time, if necessary, to annuitize an annuity you might have, or draw the cash value of your life insurance, or use some of the cash that you have in the bank, or whatever it might be, which pension option to take. All of those questions, that's the stuff that we do on a day-to-day basis. And if you'd like that help, if you'd like that guidance, if you don't think you're getting it right now, give our office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And we will schedule a free initial consultation for you in our office. There are only two financial planners in my office right now. They are me and my business partner, Marion, who you've heard here on the radio. Marion doesn't have her clients. I don't have my clients. We have our clients. And that is all of you. If ever you join the firm, you know that Marion and I are both your financial advisors. You don't have to worry about getting turned over to somebody else or trickled down to anybody else at this point. It's just us. And we're delighted to meet with you. And so one of the big questions that many people who come to our office are faced with asking is, how do I begin taking money from my accounts? How much is the right amount? Where do I take it from? What do I do? Well, years ago, there was a financial advisor out of California. His name was Bill Bengen, B-E-N-G-E-N, Bill Bengen. And he wrote this enormous white paper with all of this statistical data and all of this regression analysis that said he has now identified the ideal amount to take from your collective investment accounts so that you could draw income and never run out of money. Wow. Pretty cool, huh? Well, this was like theory. This is what financial advisors built their businesses on. It's what the media talked about. It's if you went to go see Susie Orman, or you listen to, what's his name, Kawasaki, whatever, Guy Kawasaki, any of these guys, everybody adopted Bill Bengen's theory of the 4% rule. And then you know what happened? Bill did this when he was like in his 50s. And then Bill retired. And Bill realized it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And man, was he horrified. Which always amazed me. We had been saying this, I'm not just saying me, but several financial advisors thought it was bunk what was being portrayed as the strategy to use. And, you know, I will tell you this, when it comes down to financial planning strategies, investment strategies, whatever it might be, every big entity wants to try to create a couple, boxed up packages that you could buy into that says you buy this strategy and it's good to go. There was the buckets of money approach that some people used to use a lot of times before. There was also you buy the growth with income strategy or the growth strategy and you just go with it and it will work. The reality is if you're a mathematician, if you're an engineer, you loved this because you saw statistically on spreadsheets and graphical analyses and these things called regression analyses, and it worked on paper. The reality is we don't live on paper. And I will tell any client that walks into my office who looks at a retirement planning projection that looks out 20, 30 years from now, I will tell them the only thing that I can guarantee you on this piece of paper is that none of these answers will come true. None of the numbers will be right. Because I want you to ask yourself this. 10 years ago, were you making the same amount of money? 10 years ago, were you buying the same types of things? Were you spending money differently? Did you have different types of expenses? Of course you did. No one lives life in a vacuum. Life happens. There's always things, whether it's a kid's graduation, college expense, a wedding to pay for, a roof that needs to be replaced, a new car you want to purchase, a nice long vacation you want to go on, a layoff from a job, an inheritance that you might receive. All of those different things are factors that are never factored into regression analyses and statistical figures when we're trying to look out on these numbers. And so recently, USA Today put out a piece that talked about the three problems with the 4% rule. And I thought it was interesting. Here we are some 25 years later, and now all of a sudden USA Today decides to publish an article that finally disputes Bill Bengen's thought of the 4% rule. And I thought what was fascinating to me is the three serious problems that they identified wasn't even the biggest problem that I've seen working in real life for 26 years now, of trying to provide advice to clients, 65% of whom take money out of their accounts every single month. So let's think about this for a minute. First of all, you've heard this expression called the required minimum distribution. At age 70, you are required to take a required minimum distribution from your IRA accounts, not your Roth, but any of your retirement accounts. Maybe it's an old 401k rollover, it's a traditional IRA that you have, maybe it's a profit sharing plan that got rolled over to an IRA, maybe it's a SEP, maybe it's a whatever. It's your retirement accounts. Don't count Roths here. So at the end of the year, December 31st of this year, all of the companies who held your retirement accounts, maybe you had a CD IRA at the bank, maybe you had something at Merrill Lynch, maybe there was something at Schwab, maybe at LPL, wherever it was, all of those entities have to report to the IRS the value of your collective IRAs. The IRS now knows that number. Let's say that number is $500,000, collective IRAs. The IRS then spouts back a number to you or to all of these investment entities that says you need to take out a minimum distribution. And at age 70 and a half, that minimum distribution comes out to about 3.65% of the value of your account. Now, many people say to me, Mark, how do you come up with this 3.6 number? If I go and look at the IRS table, it says 24.5. 24.5. What does that mean? What it's a, just a different way to represent this. You take, if you use the table that comes from the IRS, you take that 24.5 number and divide it into the $500,000, you're going to come up with the same number. It's 3.65. You say, what's 24.5 of the number? It's going to come up about 3.65. So you have to take out this number. So at $500,000, 3.65%, let's just call it $16,000. So that means that you have to take that amount of money out before December 31st of this year approaches. Can you take it out all at once? Yep. Can you take it out over 12 months? Yep. Can you take it out in four quarters? Absolutely. Can you take out like $11,000 now and $5,000 later? Yep, you can do anything you want. The IRS doesn't care. Do you have to take it out equally from all of the various IRAs that you have? Nope. The IRS doesn't care. All they want is the fact is to know that you took out the minimum distribution from your collective IRAs before the end of the year. Why do they want to know that? Because they just want to get their taxes. Taxes due on that amount of money. They don't care which account you took it from. But you know as well as I do that oftentimes there's some smart thinking and thought process behind which accounts to take it from. And oftentimes we make the wrong decision simply because we don't know what we don't know. So part of what I do in our theory, in our thinking, and what we're doing in our practice is to try to help you decide where to take that money from. Because what will end up happening is, let's say I have $500,000 in an IRA and $500,000 in a personal investment account. Okay. And you say, well, I need to take out $2,000 a month to support my life in retirement. And you figure, well, if I took $2,000 out a month from my regular account, my $500,000 regular account, that's pretty good. I don't have to pay much in the way of taxes. So you might as well maximize, take out as much as you can. You take that Bill Bengen 4% rule. Okay. Bill Bengen 4% rule says 4% times $500,000 is $20,000. So if I want to take out $2,000 a month, maybe I should take my $20,000 from the personal account, and then I'll just take the $4,000 from my IRA. And people do this a lot because they say, why should I pay so much tax on this $4,000? Why should I pay more tax than I have to from the IRA? And they go through age 70 and a half, taking the $2,000 that they need, the money that they need proportionately from the IRA and mostly from the personal account. And they get to December and they get a call suddenly from the financial advisor. And it says, Mr. or Mrs. Client, you're 70 and a half years old. You were supposed to take $16,000 out of your IRA. It was the required minimum distribution. And you've only taken four this year. And they go, yeah, well, all I needed was four because I got $20,000 from the other account. Well, that's nice. But the IRS says, no, you can't do that. So now all of a sudden in December, I need to send you another $12,000 because you didn't take your full $16,000. And you got to pay tax on that anyways. So maybe it made sense to first understand what your minimum distribution should have been on your IRA. And then take in the balance from your personal account. Because you had to put some logic behind this. And some thinking behind it. It's not easy, especially if you don't understand the rules. And remember, when you're seeing advertisements on television, you're seeing advertisements in magazines or little sound bites that come across your phone or your mobile device. You're not getting details, you're getting headlines. And oftentimes, we base a lot of our intelligence, frankly, on what we believe the headline means. And the headline is just that, a headline. Even when you pick up a newspaper these days, whether it's the Globe, the Herald, I don't care what you pick up, the USA Today, where this article that I'm going to talk to you comes from, you read the headline and then you read the lead paragraph. And after that, you figure, I got enough information. What do I need to read all the details for? And what you oftentimes realize is the details below is what really contains the depth and the full understanding of what they mean by the lead paragraph and why the headline is designed just to suck you in. That's all it's designed to do. It is not designed to present fact. It's designed to suck you in. How many times have you seen these posts on Facebook that said, the 10 things that are changing at Walt Disney World, you got to see number four. I mean, number four is probably no different from anything else. But because they said, you got to see it, you figure, okay, I'm going to go there. I'm going to go, maybe I'll even read number four and the rest of it I'll throw away. And we lose track. We lose sight. We don't read. We actually read more, believe it or not, today than we've ever read before. Someone once told me this statistic. We read more today than we've ever read before. The problem is we don't read the depth to the depths that of how we used to read. We used to read books. Now we read paragraphs. And that's how we get our information. All right, lots of things to think about. We've been talking about these three serious problems with the 4% retirement rule. I want to help you understand what it is that you do not know, because the 4% rule is not working these days, folks, and it hasn't worked in a long time. I'm going to explain to you why. I'm going to help you better understand how best to take money from your investment accounts when it's time to retire. When we get back, you're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
The blockbuster 2017 musical season has been announced for Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater, and you won't want to miss a show.
76 trombones.
Join in the parade when the classic American musical The Music Man marches on stage to open the season in June. In July, you're invited to be our guest when we present the magical family production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. The summer continues with one monster of a hit show, Young Frankenstein, the hilarious Mel Brooks musical. Then join us in the fall for a brand new production of the Tony Award-winning musical, Evita. The season will end with a dazzling production of 42nd Street, the Tap Dance Spectacular. Become a season subscriber and see all five shows from the best seats at the lowest prices. Book your tickets at nsmt.org and make a memory to last a lifetime.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. And I'm here each and every Sunday providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand right here on North Shore 104.9. We got the Red Sox season kicking in. I hope you enjoyed the Red Sox broadcast this weekend. We've got more of them coming up through spring training. And first pitch starts, first pitch for the first of the year is April 2nd, April 3rd against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I was about to say the Pittsburgh Penguins. I can't believe I almost said that. Did you? Oh, speaking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, did you hear that PETA is all up in arms about this? The Pittsburgh Penguins decided to put an event on the ice showcasing penguins walking around on the ice and people and doing some kind of dance or something. And PETA is all upset that we've endangered the animals and we took them out of their natural environment. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, if you're listening to this and you think that was okay for PETA to do what they did, I'm sorry, we'll just have to agree to disagree. I don't think we can have fun anymore without some kind of organization stepping in and saying, you insulted this or you disrespected that person. It's just gotten insanely too politically correct. We got to bring the pendulum back the other way. Now, I of course, we've got to make some adjustments. I think the efforts that have been focused on bullying and some of those ideas, I think that's a nice thing. I think it's important to do. Do I think some of it's a little over the top? Yeah, I do, honestly. But we got to bring it back to find some kind of a modicum that allows us to still have fun while respecting life and everything else that goes on as well. My own little soapbox for the moment. All right, we were talking about the three serious problems with the 4% rule, and this comes out of an article that appeared in USA Today. Date was March 4th, 2017. It says the 4% rule can help you plan for your future retirement income, but you can run into deep trouble if you're rigid about it. And they go on to discuss some of the main flaws and how to deal with them. You see, the 4% rule has been around for a very long time. It was introduced by a financial advisor. His name was Bill Bankin. In fact, I write about Bill in my book, Retiring with Confidence, or Retiring for the Genius. And I talk about the fact that Bill Bankin's rule doesn't work. And I think it's interesting. My book was written 2 years ago, by the way, and now USA Today is talking about the fact that it doesn't work. So maybe I had something on him. But it was interesting. Bill Bankin came out with this white paper and this rule back in 1994, and it was made famous by a study that he had done in connection with several professors at Trinity University. It says that you can withdraw 4% of your nest egg in your first year of retirement. Then you adjust future withdrawals for inflation. The withdrawal strategy assumes that your portfolio is invested 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and it's designed to make your money last for 30 years. So think about that. You're 65 years old. You're approaching retirement. You think, okay, I believe my life expectancy is 30 years. That takes me to 95. If I wanted to take 4% of my, let's use a $500,000 portfolio. I want to take 4% of that portfolio. So that's $20,000 a year. I want to take that amount out, and if I wanted to take that amount and never worry about running out of money, I invest 60% in the stock market, 40% in the bond market, take $20,000 out the first year, and then if inflation is 2% the following year, I take my $20,000 plus 2%, which is another, say, $400, and I take that amount out, and I continue to adjust with inflation every year for the next 30 years. Now, one of the things that it doesn't say in this report is it says is what many people think is if I give it $500,000 into this program, pull 4% out a year with inflation, at 95, you're not going to have $500,000 remaining. This does not mean you're living off of your principal. This actually assumes that you're spending down some of your money along the way, such that at age 95, you'll have zero. Now, you might say, I'm willing to take that risk. I'm not going to live till 95. Well, lo and behold, folks, if you're 65 years old today, there's a 50% chance one of you is living to age 90. Rules are a little bit different today. Remember, this study was done in 1994. Today is 2017. So that's what, 23 years later. 23 years later when this rule came out. Yet today, even just this week, two people came to my office who were listeners to this radio show who had said to me, well, I've been thinking through, I want to get your opinion on my thoughts of how I'm planning for my retirement. I'm using the 4% rule to see if this will work. I go, why are you using the 4% rule? That was in 1994. That rule doesn't work. It just doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? Everyone talks about the 4% rule. Yeah. Even Susie Orman and Guy Kawasaki and CNN and CNBC and all these financial magazines, Money Magazine, Kiplinger's, Worth Magazine, they'll all talk about the 4% rule. Folks, it does not work. It doesn't work because it works only on paper. It does not work in real life. So here, let me tell you a few things about the three serious problems with the 4% rule that USA Today has identified. And in my opinion, after doing this for 26 years, I don't believe they've captured the most significant reason why it doesn't work. So here are some of the reasons why it does not work. Number one is think about what inflation was back in 1994. Think about what CD rates were back in 1994. You could get 5 or 6% on CD rates. Mortgage rates, if you wanted to borrow money for a mortgage, 8% was the average mortgage rate back in 1994. So bonds were paying a pretty decent rate. You could go buy a 2-year or a 5-year treasury and get 5 or 6% or even more on it. Can you do that now? Can you get 1% at the bank? No. It's hard enough to do that. But bonds, we're in a very low interest rate environment. Bonds are at the lowest prices they've ever been. I mean, lowest interest rates that they've ever been. Mortgage rates, the lowest mortgage rates they've ever seen. So if you have 40% of your money in a bond portfolio, because remember, the 4% rule was based on 60% in the stock market, 40% in the bond market. And we weren't talking about bond appreciation. We're talking about just the interest rate that you were getting out of that. You were probably getting somewhere on average around 5 to 6% from your bond portfolio in 1994. Today, you can get 1.5 to 2 maybe. So how is it possible to do this 4% rule? How is it possible to do the 4% rule if you can't even get what was expected in the bonds? So interest rates being as low as they possibly are is one way to absolutely guarantee the fact that the 4% rule will never work. Number two, it assumes a certain asset allocation. Remember I told you it has to assume a 60-40 stocks to bonds allocation. Well, what happens if your portfolio doesn't get rebalanced on a regular basis? Let's say you start with 60-40 and like we have this past year, the stock market has done very well. So now your 60-40 portfolio isn't 60-40 anymore. Now it's 70-30. Do you leave it at 70-30 for the next year and just continue to hope to take the 4% out? No, under Bill Bengen's rule, you must, by law, by rule, by theory, rebalance it back to 60-40 all the time. But who does that? Emotionally, can you actually, if you saw your stock portfolio, you're watching your portfolio that's now was worth $500,000. Now this year, it's now worth $600,000. But that's because the stock portfolio did well. Bonds didn't do so well. Are you about to take $100,000 off the table and shove it into bonds? No. I mean, it might be the smart thing to do. Yes, emotionally and I mean, rationally, it is the right thing to do. But would you do it? No. So there's no way that you're going to keep this theory working. Now, remember, Bill Bengen's 4% rule was based upon a modeling program, a statistical modeling where there was no emotion attached to anything. It would just rebalance back to 60-40 whenever it was out of whack. You're not doing that. Oh, and by the way, oftentimes when you have to rebalance, back in 1994, by the way, there wasn't this thing called fee-based retirement accounts or no-load managed portfolios. if you wanted to rebalance from 70-30 back to 60-40, there was probably a commission involved to sell some of the securities and buy new securities. Well, there's another cost that wasn't factored in, right? But those weren't factored into the little statistical analysis because that just didn't happen that way. All right. What's the third reality? The third reality is the biggest reality of all. Back in 1994, when the 4% rule came out, when Bill said, oh, we'll make this thing last for 30 years to age 95, most people weren't living to age 95. It wasn't really a problem. People are living longer than 95. How many people do you know? I bet you know somebody. Everybody who's listening to the show knows somebody that is older than 95 years old. And do you think there's going to be less of those people in the next 10, 15, 20 years? Absolutely not. In fact, someone had said, my daughter Mindy, who's now 21 years old, when she was born in 1996, it was said that people born in 1996 will likely have an average life expectancy of 120. Now, imagine this. Here's another one of my little soapbox things. And you can call it conspiracy theory. Call it whatever you want. Did you know that if we eradicated cancer, cancer was totally wiped off this planet, average life expectancy would jump 20 years immediately. Immediately. Because we have medical science to fix a lot of the other ailments that are out there. It's cancer that we haven't figured out yet. But if we solved the problem of cancer, if we solved it, people's life expectancies would grow by 20 years. So take this for what it's worth, conspiracy theory or not. Do we want that to happen? There's a lot. I mean, look, there's a lot of people that say think about all the medical companies that would go out of business if they didn't have the ability to extend life or treat cancer. If we could end it, what would happen? We'd have a whole nother generation of people living on this planet. And if you read the book, Dan Brown's Inferno, you've seen the movie with Tom Hanks in it, it really talks about the importance of shrinking down our population for this country to continue to be sustainable. Now, I'm just issuing you some thoughts. I'm not stating my opinion or anything like that. But I want you to think about that, though. What if, does it make sense to eradicate cancer? Now, of course, if we have someone who's been inflicted with cancer, you know someone personally, you want to do everything you possibly can to make them better. But step away from that. Take a look at the big picture. Take a look at it from a global perspective. Is that a good thing? You could decide. I have a feeling there are people at a much higher pay scale than I am that are having those conversations. It always amazes me when you used to see Jerry Lewis walk up at the muscular dystrophy telethon, right? And he said, oh, we're just a few dollars away. Just a few dollars away from solving this terrible disease. Well, I'd be hard pressed to ask the question, just tell me how much you need. Just tell me how, look, if Bill Gates could write a check right now to solve the problem, or Warren Buffett could solve the problem, they would do it. But no, I just think I'm going to get off my soapbox because I'm going to get myself in trouble. Someone's going to call with a nasty call to the office. So, all right. So let's go back to the three serious problems with the 4% rule. So the three serious problems that USA Today quotes with the 4% rule is number one, interest rates have fallen. So there's no way to make the 4% rule work in real life. Number two, it assumes that you have to rebalance your portfolio on a regular basis. It assumes that you have to maintain a 60-40 split. How many people are willing to rebalance both in good times and bad? And thirdly, people are living longer. People are living longer. That with the 4% rule when Bill did it was based upon a 30-year retirement life cycle and running out of money by that 30th year. Most people are living a lot longer than that. But of those three reasons, that isn't the big reason. That isn't the real reason why the 4% rule doesn't work. And I want to tell you what that real reason is, the real big one, the one that nobody can escape from. When we get back, you're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents for our fourth and final segment here on right here at North Shore 104.9, where we provide financial advice in a language you can understand. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, but you're probably sick of me saying that already. I'm sure you know that. It's right near the North Shore Mall, red brick building behind Shaw's Supermarket. We're on the third floor. If you'd like to come in and schedule a free initial consultation to see whether you perhaps may want a second opinion, perhaps you're just starting to say, you know what, I don't want to do this on my own anymore. I'd like to get some advice. I'd like to get some help. I'd like to have someone help me manage my money, but also provide me ongoing financial planning advice along the way. Perhaps you're trying to figure out, should we move into this retirement community? Should we buy or lease a car? Am I having the right tax withholdings done from Social Security, from my IRAs, from my pension check, all of those things? That's what we help you with. We manage a lot of money for people, a lot of money, $330 million. To be honest, that is a lot of money. That's what, a third of $1 billion? Can you imagine that there's that much money just in my office and it's sitting around people that live right here on the North Shore, in the Merrimack Valley, in the southern New Hampshire area? Folks, there's a lot of money around. Average account size, average household account size in my office, about $800,000. Now, our typical clients have between $500,000 and $2.5 million. Some have more than that, yes. Some have less than that, but I'm talking about what the average is right now. Our typical clients are over the age of 55. They're generally married. They've lived in their home or they lived in the community for 20 years or more. They plan to spend between $5,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement. If I'm describing you, love to meet with you. Love to have you come in, schedule some time, no cost, no obligation. Anybody who's ever been to my office will tell you it is the most low pressure experience you've ever had. It's just a conversation. My phone number at the office to schedule an initial consultation is 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. No one is in the office today to take your call, but Jody will get back to you on Monday. We'll schedule some time, have you come in. And if you say to yourself, you know what, now's not the right time for me, but I'd love to learn a little bit more about Mark's practice or at least stay in touch with him, we put out a newsletter. It's called Planning Pointers. Each and every Friday morning, it lands in your inbox at 10:30. You want to get the newsletter? All you need to do is go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of the website. You'll see a button that says sign up for the newsletter. Hit that button, put in your email address, and next Friday, you will get the next issue. We've been doing, I think we're almost up to 500 issues of the newsletter that we've done since March of 2009. It really amazes me. All right. I told you that I was going to tell you the biggest mistake, the biggest reason that this 4% rule doesn't work. Now, for those of you just joining us, let me be sure you understand what this 4% rule is that I'm talking about. Years ago, 1994, a guy by the name of Bill Bangen, a financial advisor out of California, came up with this white paper and this theory and this whole project that he put together with a series of professors. And it was designed to help people understand what is the ideal withdrawal rate. How much can you take from your collective nest egg in retirement and never run out of money? It's a pretty cool theory. It was the cover of every financial publication. Bill got famous over it. He wrote this when he was in his 50s. And then Bill decided to retire. You know what Bill found out? It doesn't work. It looked good on paper. It looked good on theory. Yet today, even today, Money Magazine, Kiplinger's, financial advisors all around this country, mutual fund companies, annuity companies, still refer back to the white paper and the analysis written by Bill Bangen to talk about the fact that they say it works. Well, I've been saying it's been flawed for years. And in fact, in my book, Retiring for the Genius, I talk about how this whole thing is flawed. And then lo and behold, this past week, USA Today, bold USA Today, you know, always on the cutting edge, decides to step up with a story in their March 4th edition saying the three serious problems with the 4% retirement rule. And in the last segment, I explained them. I'm going to go through them very quickly here. But I'm going to tell you, I read this article and I thought, oh, great. Someone's finally going to agree with what I've been talking about for the longest time. And the four serious problems that they talk about don't even address the real serious problem. And I'm going to talk to you about the real serious problem in a second. So here's the three serious problems that the 4% rule says, the way the 4% rule doesn't work. So here's the basic theory of it. You invest, you take your nest egg, the amount of money that you've accumulated. You build a portfolio that's 60% in the stock market, 40% in the bond market. I don't care if you buy stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, index funds, doesn't matter. You can build your own mix. Bill doesn't have a favorite way of doing it. 60-40. Every year, you agree to take 4% of the value. So if your portfolio is $500,000, at the end of the year, you say, I'm going to take 4%, that's $20,000. You can figure out what the math is per month, but let's stick with it on an annual basis. You take $20,000 out. At the end of the next year, you look at the portfolio. You look at the portfolio of what it is, not what it grew to. I don't care if your portfolio went from $500,000 to $600,000. You still take 4% of the original number, that $40,000, and you add whatever inflation was for the year. Let's say inflation was 2% for the year. So now you take $40,200 out of the account. And that's what you take. Because some years, we all well know, the market could go down. And what if your $500,000 dipped down to $300,000? But Bill says, still take your $40,000 plus your inflation, and this is all going to work. On a spreadsheet, it works great. It really does. If you're an engineer, you love this stuff because you put all your regression analysis and all these sharp ratios and beta coefficients and all these things around, and you go, oh, I got this thing figured out. This is going to be perfect, perfect for us. And then you realize a few things happen. Number one, one reason why it fails is because when Bill wrote this analysis, interest rates were very high. It was back in 1994. You could get a 5%, 6% CD. You could get 7 or 8% on treasuries. You could buy high-yield bonds that were paying 10 and 12%. Can we do that today? No, you cannot. So if 40% of your portfolio is based upon a theory of interest rates being that high and interest rates are where they are today, how could that possibly work? That's number one. Number two. Number two, the second reason, it said it was based upon the fact that we were building a portfolio of 60-40, and every year you'd have to rebalance that portfolio. What is the likelihood? What is the likelihood that if your $500,000 portfolio were to grow to $600,000 this past year, what is the likelihood that you would skim off $100,000 and add it to the bonds because the bonds didn't do so well, so you could bring it back down to that 60-40 split? You wouldn't do it. You would not do that. Because emotionally, you'd say, I'm not going to look at this run that I'm having. Did you see what Cramer said? Did you see what they said on CNBC, on Bloomberg? Have you read the newspaper? Have you seen the sound bites? Oh, my God, we're going shooting for the moon here. I'm not making that change. Well, now all of a sudden, you just blew up Bill Bankman's spreadsheet, his theory. And number three, the third reason why it doesn't work, is because back in 1994, Bill said, well, we're going to base this on running out of money in 30 years, retire at 65. Die at 95, and at 95, there are $0 left. You're just going to, you know, all the toys are going to run out. Everything in the account's going to run out. It'll be worth zero. How many people plan their life to a date when it's going to be zero? Do you know when you're going to die? Maybe back in 1994, picking 95 years old was a safe time period to say, you know what? Most of us will be dead by then. What do you think the likelihood of you being dead by 95 is today? You know somebody who's older than that, don't you? And you know that as long as medical science continues to build what it's building. Remember, back in 1904, did we have an iPad? Did we have a cell phone? What do we have? I don't even know if the VCR was invented back in 1994. And how well is that doing for you right now? Remember, you had to decide whether you wanted VCR or beta. What should I buy? Remember the Blockbuster videos? Remember going down to Leechmere? The Leechmeres, right? That's what they used to call Leechmeres. And you used to buy cassette tapes. Or it used to be 8-tracks. And then you'd buy cassette tapes. Can you find any of those things around? Things have changed. Things have adapted. Technology's gotten better. We've grown smarter. We're living longer. But all of that, on a spreadsheet, and we continue. Many, many organizations continue to rely on the wisdom of Bill Bengen's 4% retirement rule in his spreadsheet to say this will work. You can buy software programs that are built around this whole thing. But I will tell you, I told you there was one reason why, that's even bigger than any of the other three as to why the 4% rule doesn't work. The fact is, life happens. Imagine this. Could you imagine taking the same amount of money from all of your investment portfolio for the rest of your life, growing it solely at the rate of inflation? Now, that might work well for your day-to-day, month-to-month expenses. But do you plan on owning the same car for the next 30 years? What if the kids come to you and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, can I borrow $10,000 or $20,000? Or you decide to move, and you got to sell your property and move somewhere else. Or you need to replace the boiler. Or you want to go on a fancy vacation. Or. None of those factors were built into Bill's calculation. He said, put your nest egg in this program, draw 4%, take your Social Security check, done. Now, that works out really, really well back in 1994 when people had three sources of income. Do you remember what those three sources of income were? Social Security, a pension, and the money that you might take from your investment account. Well, one of those things doesn't exist anymore for most people, and that's called a pension. So now there is a greater reliance on your investment account to pull money out. And you need more than 4%. Maybe some years you'd made 4%, but other years you need more. I actually believe, to tell you the truth, that you can draw closer to 6. And I know that sounds counterintuitive to what I just told you with everything. But I believe that a well-balanced portfolio, that's 60-40 still, stock funds to bond funds, but you use a mix, not just big caps, but small caps, mid caps, international securities. You use fixed income that includes both, that includes a variety of securities that pay interest and dividends. Don't just think of it as treasury securities. Maybe there's high yield securities. Maybe there's corporate bonds. Maybe there's REITs. Maybe there's all different types of investments that pay out a various type of income based upon different and differing and ever-changing circumstances. I believe 6% is a safe rate to take out. However, if you take out 6% and then you say to me, Mark, I need $20,000 for a car. Well, we're going to readjust your 6% number back down to what the value of your account is today. Not keep it 6%, not keep the amount of money you're taking out. You have to readjust. You have to rethink. You got to reobserve. You got to re-look at your situation. You need to reevaluate where you are year after year. And so that financial plan that was written for you and you got this nice booklet and all shiny glossy thing that you looked at 10 years ago when you met with a financial advisor and you haven't looked at it since, that doesn't work anymore. You need a living financial plan. And that's what we do at Friedman Financial all the time. It's not about living off the financial plan we wrote 10 years ago. It's keeping that financial plan alive, knowing full well that you're going to spend money. You might inherit money. You might have bigger expense years and lesser expense years. You might pay taxes more so in one year than another. And we make those adjustments and you see the progress. You plot the history so that as you're getting to age 80, 85, you can actually see whether you're really running out of money or whether maybe you haven't spent enough. And maybe you can begin to think about what do I need to do, whether it's for long-term care. Maybe it's for how am I going to pass some of this money off to the kids. Maybe I can now make an informed decision as to whether I should stay in my house or move to a retirement community or downsize a little bit. It's a living plan that incorporates all of your investments, provides you advice on how to keep your portfolio well-positioned, but also incorporate it into your overall strategy. That's great financial planning. That's what I would love to do for you. If you're interested in working with a firm like ours, visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman. Do E's and a D, financial.com. You can also sign up for my newsletter. If you happen to be at the website, hit the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, put in the email address and you'll get that. Or if now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, give my office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Call me to schedule your free initial consultation. We'll send you out an information kit, get you ready and prepared for your first meeting. It will be the most informal, most easy conversation you have ever had. I'll ask you questions that you may not have ever been asked before. But I will tell you this, you will love the meeting. Our phone number, once again, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Give me a call if you'd like to schedule that free initial consultation. But for now, I've got to get out of here, make room for Aurelia Nelson, and curtain up. You've been listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 144.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.